From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. My guest this week is radio and television personality George Klein from Memphis. He can be heard on Sirius XM Satellite Radio's Elvis Channel. He hosts his own TV show, and he has a program on WMC in Memphis. His new book is Elvis, My Best Man, a memoir of the years he spent in the court of the king. George Klein was part of Elvis Presley's inner circle from the very beginning. George Klein, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Hey guys, thanks for having me, Gary. Appreciate it, no problem.
Now, you started as a disc jockey back in the early days of rock and roll. How did you get your start in radio?
What happened was, actually, I was a sports editor in my high school newspaper, and I wanted to really be a sports announcer. And I was working with some of the guys who were broadcasting the local high school football games. And at the end of the season, they asked me if I would want to hang around the station and help out the night guy who was Dewey Phillips, a legendary disc jockey out of Memphis, who was the first disc jockey in the world to play an Elvis record. And I said, sure. So I stuck around just to help Dewey run errands for him and watch the studio at night and everything. And I went in and started working on my own broadcast talents and cut some tapes, sent some air checks out, got a summer job, and I was on my way. And then I came back to Memphis and started working at a local Memphis station and just got lucky and hit it.
Now, Dewey Phillips, I guess, is kind of famous for kind of breaking the color barrier of radio back in those days, playing both race records, as they were called, and white music. What about you? Did you play all kinds of music on your show?
Yeah, what I did was, Dewey and I were very good friends, and when I got hot, I was across town on another station, WMC, which I'm back on now, and I was on in the afternoon with the George Klein Rock and Roll Ballroom, and Dewey was on at night, so I had him in the afternoon, Dewey had him at night, and when I'd get off, I'd go hanging with Dewey, and when Dewey would be there, and then Elvis would come by, and we'd all three go hang out, and it was just a great thing happening. It was a magical moment in music history in America. Was the crossover from black to white radio, and Dewey and I were playing a lot of black music. We were playing Sam Cooke and the Clovers and the Platters and Hank Ballard and the Midnighters and Little Richard and Bo Diddley and Chuck Berry. And the white stations, they were playing vanilla stuff. It's kind of funny. They played they didn't want to play the original, so they would play what we call back in those days the cover record. In other words, if Fats Domino had a song called Blueberry Hill, Pat Boone would cover him with a white version. And if the Otis Williams and the Cherms had a song called Ivory Tower, I think the McGuire sisters, somebody covered them. And so these top 40 stations were playing the cover records, and Dewey and I were playing the originals, and you couldn't fool the kids. The kids knew the difference, and they just zeroed in on us, and it was off and running.
Now, you grew up in Memphis?
Yeah, Memphis is my home. Went to high school here, went to University of Memphis, graduated with a degree in marketing, and I've stayed here all my life. Now, the only time I lived for about a year in California with Elvis. When he was making movies, I was working with him, and lived out there in Los Angeles for about a year. Other than that, I've spent most of my life in Memphis.
Well, I want to get into Elvis, but before we do, let me ask you about some of the other, because you've crossed paths with so many of our heroes in your career. You were the MC when the Beatles played Memphis.
That's right. The first time the Beatles came to Memphis, I MC'd they did two shows. They did an afternoon show and a night show. And I did the afternoon show. The reason I didn't do the night show was because it was on a Saturday, and my television show had a TV show in Memphis for 12 years back in those days, much similar to American Bandstand or something, and it was called the George Klein Talent Party, and I had to get back to the station to do my TV show, so one of the other guys across town did the night show. But I did that first one, and I'll never forget that John Lennon of the Beatles had made a statement that they were more popular than Elvis. I mean, I'm sorry, more popular than Jesus Christ.
Freudian slip there, George.
Yeah, and we did have that battle once, Elvis versus the Beatles in Memphis, and you know, the old radio battle. Now, obviously, Elvis won. But Lennon had made that statement, and actually, I knew what he said. What John Lennon, and I was a big fan of John Lennon's also, because I thought he was really a talented human McCartney. What John Lennon said, Gary, was, he said, if we were going to do a show, and it was during, and it was church time on a Sunday at 11 o'clock a.m. or whenever, we would draw more than the people going to church. He didn't mean that they were more popular. He was just trying to get a statement across that rock and roll had really taken over once again, was reborn, if you will. And so when I brought on the Beatles, I gave him a great introduction. And as I was coming off stage, John Lennon grabbed me and said, "Hey, man, thanks for the great intro, you know."
Oh, that's so fantastic. Who else was on the bill when the Beatles played?
Bobby Hebb. Sonny. Bobby had Sonny, mm-hmm. And that was it. He opened the show. There was intermission, and the Beatles came on.
Wow. Ah, this is so exciting. Well, and of course, the King. Let's talk about the music first when we talk about Elvis. You know, he has so many high points in his career on his records: the Sun Sessions, the early RCA size, the later '60s recordings from Elvis and Memphis era. So, what are the records of the King's that are your personal favorite?
I have three, Gear. In the early days, it was "Don't Be Cruel," which is an awesome song. And I've interviewed a lot of people, and Sam Phillips, who discovered Elvis, said that was his favorite Elvis record. And Jerry Lee Lewis, who's a legendary rocker and still rocking, he said that was his favorite Elvis. So it was mine, too. But I went further than that. My gospel favorite was "How Great Thou Art." And in the later years, I thought "Suspicious Minds" was a great song.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out. Because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see what you're doing to me? When you don't believe a word I say, we can't go on together with suspicion.
We're talking, by the way, if you're just joining us, with George Klein, and his new book is called "Elvis, My Best Man, Radio Days, Rock and Roll Nights, and My Lifelong Friendship with Elvis." You met Elvis when you were in the eighth grade.
Yeah, that's true. We were, ironically, in the same music class. It was eighth grade music. Miss Mormon was the teacher, and we were approaching the holidays, and she said, instead of studying musical theory and musical history, we're going to do Christmas carols. And Elvis raised his hand and asked her if he could bring his guitar to school, and she said, sure. There were a few laughs in the room because it wasn't cool in 1948 for a 12-year-old to bring his guitar to school and sing, but he did, and he got up and sang. He sang two country songs. I'll never forget. He sang "Cold, Cold, Icy Fingers," and he sang "Old Ship," which he later recorded. At that moment, we bonded, and coincidentally, once again, we're in the exact same classes all the way through high school. I became class president, and it was traditional at our high school that the senior class sponsored a talent show, and I was very instrumental in that, being the president of the class. And so Elvis won the talent show. At that point, I said to myself, you know, this guy may have a chance, you know.
So you really, even then, back then, you said, well, there's something special here.
Yeah, because we had some pretty good talent on that talent show, and he came out of nowhere to win it. And he stuck with that, you know, bringing his guitar to school in the 10th, 11th, and 12th grades. And he would bring it, he would sing at school functions and school parties and school gatherings, but nothing as big as the talent show, because that was for the whole school. And he won it, and we had some pretty good talent that had gone to that school. And so I thought maybe he had a chance. I'm not going to be naive enough to think that I knew he'd be a big star or anything like that. But I thought he had a chance to get a contract.
So what do you think he had? Was he a natural?
He was different, Gary. He was like nobody else. I remember when he went in to cut that record for Sam, for that demo thing for his mom, quote unquote. And right. They asked him, "Who do you sound like?" He said, "I don't sound like anybody." He didn't sound like anybody. He didn't look like anybody. He didn't dress like anybody. He was doing his own thing. It was kind of wise. Now as you look back on it, you can see what he was doing. He was not imitating anybody. He wasn't dressing like anybody. If he was dressing like anybody, it was the black entertainers, which he admired. And he would dress like, as opposed to wearing the country outfits that the guys were wearing who were singing country music, Elvis would come out on stage in a like a black suit and a pink tie or a black sport coat with white stripes down the side and white stripes down the pants legs. And his hair in 1950, 40, when he graduated in 53, Elvis's hair was longer than the Beatles when they came along in 64. And so he had the sideburns and he had the look. He was just something different, and the timing was perfect.
Now, so you said that quote-unquote about him recording that song for his mom, which is sort of the legend, but did Elvis know what he was doing? He wanted to be discovered. He was trying to get Sam Phillips to pay
attention. That's right. You hit the nail on the head. What he was, we later figured that out. He went in, and it was Elvis's nice way of auditioning, because he didn't want to audition and be turned down, because Sam Phillips, even though he was starting the Sun label, it was called Memphis Recording Service. You go in for $4, you make a demo record, and you take it home, play it for your friends. Well, Elvis went in hoping they would hear something in his voice, and they did. Lo and behold, they called him back because Sam Phillips heard something in his voice, gave him a shot, and you know, as we say in the business, the rest is history.
That's right. And so were you hanging around with Elvis in those early Sundays? Did you?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, what happened was... you know, I was working at a small station outside of Memphis, and I'd come home on the weekends, and I'd never forget. I came home one weekend, and I went up to see Dewey, and he says, come here, I want you to hear something. And he put a record on a turntable, and he wouldn't let me see the label. He said, who's that singing? And I said, man, I don't know. He said, you should know. You went to high school with him. I said, you mean Elvis has a record out? He said, yeah, that's Elvis Presley. I said, what's the story? He said, well, Sam Phillips brought it up to me last night. And he said, I played and I had to play it 7 times. I think the kid's got a chance to be a star. And I said, wow. I said, you got an extra copy? He said, yes. So he gave it to me. And I took it back to the small station outside of Memphis. And to this day, they still talk to him about me bringing that record in.
You do you still have that copy, by the way?
No, I don't. I wish I did.
me too. In fact, I wish I had it. Well, so things took off, you know, well, not so quickly for Elvis. There was a couple of years there where he was kind of, you know, just kind of making regional hits at Sun Records. What was that like?
Well, it was pretty cool because it was beginning to happen locally in the Mid-South. By the Mid-South, Memphis is surrounded by two other states. Arkansas is right on the edge of Memphis, and Mississippi is right on the tip end of Memphis. And so you had Tennessee, Arkansas, Mississippi there supporting Elvis. And he was playing all the small towns in the area, beginning to make a lot of noise. And it looked as though something was going to happen. Obviously, we had no idea it was going to be as huge as it became, but we thought maybe he could be a country rock star or something like that, a rockabilly star, but had no idea it'd be a rock, you know, he would set the trend in rock and roll. But we hung out, and we would go places, and people, of course, would recognize him, and it was kind of fun to just hang out with him and party with him, you know, and stuff like that.
As a disc jockey, when did you first start using the term rock and roll? When did that come in?
Well, it came in when I was working with Elvis, working in Memphis in 1957. Bill Haley had a song called Rock Around the Clock, and Joe Turner had a song called Shake, Rattle, and Roll. Now, I know Alan Freed is credited with coining the phrase rock and roll, but I was using it too, and it was no big deal, you know, because as I said, Big Joe Turner had Shake, Rattle, and Roll, and Bill Haley had Rock Around the Clock. You put them together, it's rock and roll, you know.
We're talking with George Klein, the man who coined the phrase rock and roll, and his new book is called Elvis, My Best Man. Well, so you're not a huge fan of Colonel Parker, although if Elvis hadn't met Colonel Parker, I guess the world would be a lot different.
Yeah, there's in my book, Elvis, My Best Man, which is available at leading bookstores, there's a several pages about me and disagreeing with Colonel Parker how he handled Elvis. I would have to say that, you know, that 80% of what Colonel Parker did was very good and very correct. It was very important to Elvis's career. But 20% was not. Colonel Parker missed. Elvis outgrew Colonel Parker. And as Elvis got a little bit older and was capturing a more of a worldwide audience, Colonel Parker was not in tune with what was happening. He was looking at show me the money, show me the money, and the quick dollar. And I kept saying, but Colonel, what about the big picture, man? And these songs Elvis is doing, these movies Elvis are doing, they're not happening. And, well, it may not be happening, George, that's the way he talked, but we're making big money, we're making big bucks. And I said, yeah, but what about the future? He said, we don't think about the future, we think about now. And so I debated him on that, and got a little uptight with me, but I got my point across to him.
Yeah, the songwriters, Lieber and Stoller, who wrote Jailhouse Rock, they had conceived of a Broadway musical for Elvis, which the Colonel turned down, and they said, well, the Colonel was only interested in making the same dollar over and over again. Would you agree
with that? That is very true. Very true. You know, on one side of the coin, he was correct. On the other side, he wasn't. One side of the coin was, you know, you got to get it while you're hot, because they didn't know actually really if rock and roll was going to last. A lot of people thought rock and roll was a fad, like the mambo and the tango and those fad dances that were coming in, but fad music things. But the Colonel was going after that quick dollar and the sure dollar, and then with the movies, he said they had a winning formula, and I kept debating him on that. I said, but Colonel, Elvis is starting to develop as an actor. You need to get him better scripts and better supporting actors and better songs. And he said, oh, no, George, if we challenge Hollywood on this and we make a bomb, they blame it on us, maybe our career's down the tubes. He said, but if we go along with what they say, their formula pictures, and it doesn't work, then we can blame it on them. Well, yeah, that has its merits in some ways. In some ways it does. And obviously, you know, Elvis got tired of those movies. He would come home from Hollywood, and I'd say, Elvis, what's the new movie about? It's the same story, different location. I sing 12 songs, beat up the guy and get the girl, you know.
Well, you know, Elvis really was a fine actor, and I think, I don't know which one is your favorite, but I think King Creole shows what a great actor.
You hit the nail on the head again. That is my favorite Elvis picture, is King Creole. I thought he did his best acting. There's a reason for that. I'll get to it in a minute. If I forget, remind me. But he had his best supporting cast, Walter Matthau. He had, Shirley Jones in there. He had Dean Jagger. He'd been nominated for Academy Award. Michael Curtiz was the great director. He directed Bogart and Casablanca. It all came together in that movie, in the great location of New Orleans. It was just a magical time. And what the point I was going to make a moment ago is that Elvis held a meeting with all the guys before we started shooting. And I was on a lot of shooting of that. And he said, guys, he said, you know, I got drafted. I got to go in the Army. He said, so I'm not sure what's going to happen when I come out of the Army where rock and roll will still be around. He said, so I want to really concentrate on my acting in this picture, and I'm going to try to do my best. He said, I got a great script supporting. He said, I got the whole nine yards, got the supporting cast, good songs. He said, so let's knock him out. So he did. He knocked him out in that movie, King Creole. Then when he comes out of the Army, Colonel zaps him right back in those formula pictures again.
Well, you know, one of Elvis's biographers, Peter Guralnick, said that he thought that maybe Elvis, because he was using barbiturates or whatever he was using, that affected him when he came back from the Army, and that he wasn't as good an actor after the Army, regardless of the pictures that he was in. Do you disagree?
Yeah, I totally disagree with that. Peter don't know what he's talking about. You know, Elvis was as good as the script they gave him. And G.I. Blues was a formula picture. And the pictures that followed, the only pictures that were a little bit different were Viva Las Vegas. Look at Elvis. He was in Blue Hawaii. He performed well in those pictures.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, it's like a ball team. Sometimes they'll play up to the level of the competition. Well, Elvis will play up to the level of the script and the supporting actors and the songs that he had. If they were good, he would match it. If they weren't, he'd just go along with it, you know. No, those what they were called Benzedrine pills, they gave me energy.
Yeah.
Were like four cups of coffee or something. No, it was, that's not true. I never heard that statement. I have to go on record as disagreeing with Peter Grodd. I disagree with Peter Grodd on a lot of stuff.
You're not a fan of those books?
Well, to a degree. I read his first one, Last Train to Memphis, about a third of it.
Yeah.
And it was so boring because I knew everything he was talking about.
Right.
And he writes too much detail. He doesn't get to the point like my book. I move right to the gist of the story. I cut to the chase on my book. Well, Peter would bore you with so many details.
Uh-huh.
I mean, obviously it was a bestseller and a decent book, but And another thing was, Peter and I had a falling out. You see, Peter asked me, he came to me and he said, I'm writing this definitive book on Elvis. I said, okay. He said, but I don't have anybody give me anything from the early days except you, because you were there when Elvis, before Elvis was Elvis. And he said, you know, if you'll just give me some stuff. I said, well, Peter, I want to save it for my book eventually. He said, tell you what I'll do. If you will give me some stuff from the early days about his mom and Sun Records and Jailhouse Rock and all that stuff in high school, he said, I'll help you write your book. I said, oh, I'll get you a great writer. I said, you got a deal. So if you look in the index of that book, my name is mentioned a whole lot. And then when it was time for me, I called upon him. I said, okay, Peter, you had a great book. Now is the time to help me. And he put me in a trick bag. He said, well, I'm really busy. I'm tied up in writing a follow-up book, and I'll try to get you a writer. And I said, well, okay. And then he called me. He said, well, I got you a writer. And I said, well, who is it? He said, well, it's a local newspaper guy. I said, a local newspaper guy? I said, well, what kind of book has he written? Well, he hadn't written any books. I said, come on, man. And so every time I called him, he was busy. And so we just agree to disagree, I guess.
Well, your book is a fine book. It's called Elvis, My Best Man, Radio Days, Rock and Roll Nights, My Lifelong Friendship with Elvis. The author is George Klein, who we're just speaking to right now. Well, you know, it's easy to blame the Colonel, I guess, for a lot of those bad movies and, you know, No Room to Rumba and A Sports Car and all that. But Do the Clam come to mind. But what about Elvis? Why didn't Elvis put his foot down?
Well, that's a good question, because Elvis was such a nice guy. And he didn't like to cause a situation. He didn't like confrontations. And he felt that the Colonel got him that far and made him a big star, which Elvis is being a little naive in that, because Elvis would have been a big star without the Colonel, really, if you want to know the truth. He had too much talent. But having said that, Elvis just didn't want to, he didn't like to make waves. And he was very loyal, really a loyal guy, good guy. And so, consequently, he wouldn't. We kept saying, Elvis, put your foot down. And Elvis, you know, demand this, and he wouldn't do it. He said, like when Barbara Streisand came to him with The Star Is Born.
Mm-hmm.
We said, Elvis, this is the vehicle you've been looking for to go back to Hollywood with. Because he hadn't made a movie in a while. He said, man, you're going to play opposite Streisand. Great songs, great script, not everything. And so he told Barbara, you know, right by Colonel Parker, out of courtesy, we did a big mistake. Barbara Streisand goes in and he says, okay, Barbara, I knew what he was going to say because he said it to me once. He said, here's the deal. He said, Elvis gets 50% of the picture, gets $1 million up front, gets star billing and script control, and you can take it or leave it. She said, whoa, wait a minute, Colonel. She said, I'm a pretty big star, too. She said, can't we compromise on some of this stuff? He said, no, we can't. And he said, because if we do this for you, Barbara, when Elvis goes back to Hollywood to make pictures again, full-time, they'll say, wait a minute, you didn't make Barbara Streisand agree to those demands. Why would you not? So, you know, but that was a cop-out, because he could say, yeah, but Streisand's a superstar. If you give me a Streisand, maybe we'll talk turkey. But because the Elvis was getting, you know, second-rate actors opposite him.
Yeah.
With the exception of a few, King Creole, and there was a few other movies. But still, you're only as good as a script, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, if the script is bad or weak, how are you going to show out your talent? The lines are weak, you know?
If Elvis had made A Star Is Born, what effect do you think it might have had? I mean, it's hard to play what if, but what do you think?
It would have had a tremendous effect, because he would have gotten shape, he would have lost weight, he would have got ready, and that would have revived his movie career. He would have been much like when Frank Sinatra did From Here to Eternity. Sinatra won the Academy Award as Best Supporting Actor. I'm not saying Elvis would have won an award, but I guarantee you he probably would have been nominated. And that would have re-energized him as far as making movies. At that point, he would have got better scripts and better supporting actors and et cetera.
What about Elvis' personal relationships? Priscilla also wrote a book, and it's an entertaining book. And in her book, she sort of colors Elvis in that, you know, once she had a child, Elvis was no longer interested in her.
Well, I don't know how to handle that question, because Priscilla and I are very good friends.
Yeah.
And I love her to death, and I think she's been a class lady in the whole Elvis situation. I'm gonna ask for a pass on that.
No problem, but you must have known Elvis before he met Priscilla. What about with his other girlfriends?
Well, there was never any serious one. The only two women that Elvis ever loved in his life was Priscilla Presley and his mother Gladys.
do you think Elvis would have married again?
That's a real good question. He called me and told me that he was going to marry Ginger Alden, which I introduced Ginger Alden to Elvis. But whether he was going to marry her or not, I wasn't exactly sure. If I had to bet my life on that, I don't think he would have, but you never know.
Now, what was it like hanging out with Elvis? Was he a lot of fun? Did he crack you up?
Oh, Elvis was great, man. Hanging out with Elvis, are you crazy, man? Hanging out with him, superstar, and, you know, the icon that he was. Man, the biggest star in the world. It was wonderful, man. It was like a dream for me being in radio and TV. Here I'm hanging out with the biggest star in the show business, and, you know, everywhere we went, it was like a crowd. There wasn't any paparazzi in those days, but everywhere we went, he attracted a big crowd as far as people, you know. And then once in a while, the press would show up. But it was just so much fun, man. It was exciting and history-making and terrific. And any adjective you want to put on it, you can tack it on there.
Well, now, when you knew Elvis before he was Elvis, as you were saying before, although, you know, he was always Elvis, but you know what I mean. Did you see a change in his personality when he became rich and famous?
Oh, sure. Well, it was for the better. He became more polished, more worldly, more intelligent, more sharper, great attitude on stuff, a great insight. He just became more... He was going through the rock and roll school of music, is what he was going through, movies, and he, not school, but college, and you could just tell, you could see every day he just got sharper and sharper and sharper. I mean, you know, he held his own with President Nixon when he went to visit President Nixon, and he held his own with a lot of governors, and he was just really becoming really smooth, you know.
Now, it's been over 30 years since Elvis performed live on stage, so a lot of our listeners have never had a chance to see him. What was Elvis like in concert?
Elvis in concert was probably the most dynamic white entertainer that ever lived. I don't know any white entertainer that could outdo him on stage. He was exciting. He gave him his theory was, and he explained it. He said he didn't like it when entertainers came out when he was small, little, and going to shows. And they just sat there and sang or stood on in front of the microphone, and you know, with hand motions or playing a guitar. He wanted to give them a show, so he borrowed from the black entertainers. He liked Jackie Wilson a tremendous amount. He borrowed some of Jackie's moves. He borrowed some of James Brown's moves, and some of the Midnighters and people like that. And he just put a show on. He moved around on stage, and you know, get with a tremendous amount of energy, and just put had everything into the songs. And he just didn't stand in front of the microphone like a ballad singer.
Now, you also knew some of those people that you just mentioned that Elvis borrowed from, like James Brown. I mean, did those people, how did they feel about Elvis using their...
Well, James Brown and Jackie understood. James Brown it was on record. James was a friend of mine. He did my television show a bunch, and I introduced him to Elvis. And he said, as I recall, Elvis actually opened the door and made it easier for their music to be heard and exposed to, because he was doing some of their music. And so then it became cool. So they said, well, let's check out the original guys. And on the scene right there immediately was Jackie Wilson and James Brown, two very high entertainers. And so they immediately got accepted by the audience because Elvis was doing some of their music.
Hey, the book is called Elvis, My Best Man, Radio Days, Rock and Roll Nights, and My Lifelong Friendship with Elvis. And the author, our guest today, George Klein. GK, thanks so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Okay, my man, thank you so much for having me. I promise you this, whoever picks up that book, Elvis, My Best Man, will not set it down for a while, because it starts off like a jet from the beginning and moves real quick, and it's easy reading, and it's a true story. A lot of people have got Elvis stories. I've got the real story.
That's it for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and that you'll come back again next week for another great show. Check out our podcast page at KUSP.org or find us on iTunes and Facebook. 170 fans can't be wrong. My special thanks to George Klein for being my guest this week. His book, Elvis, My Best Man, Radio Days, Rock and Roll Nights, and My Lifelong Friendship with Elvis Presley. Thanks also to our From the Bookshelf staff, Miss Breanne Beale, for all of her hard work. Thanks, Breanne. Thanks for listening, everybody. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro.